the ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blocks Hub in Copenhagen, Denmark, with your co-hosts, Ed Lay and Thomas Mulhern, this is Global Denmark.
Welcome back to the Global Denmark podcast. We have a little treat for you guys today. First of all, before we get into our special guest, I just want to say thank you to all of our subscribers, our listeners, for such an overwhelming amount of support that we've received since we launched at the end of December. We had a vision of driving conversations that could teach lessons to and from Denmark, and our guests have been extremely inspirational, and we are so pleased with the progress of the podcast right now. We've literally gotten thousands of plays and viewers, and the podcast is growing each week. So thank you so much for your support. We are going to continue developing our product, and with your help, we can keep growing and driving more and more conversations, hopefully leading to better integration, better innovation, and better health. So as I said, we have a special treat today, and that is I will be interviewing our co-host, Ed Lay. Many of you have asked if we could get a little bit more information about Ed and I, so we're going to start with me interviewing Ed today, and we will have Ed interviewing me at another time. Ed is the owner of Absolute Health, where he ran a company both in the UK and now he's running his company out of Copenhagen. He's the host of the Global Denmark podcast and first mover with regards to optimizing mental and physical health for CEOs and top athletes here in Denmark and abroad. So without further ado, we bring you Ed Lay. Welcome back to this very special edition of the Global Denmark podcast. I am your host, Thomas Mulhern, and I am here with both my co-hosts and guest today, Ed Lay. Ed, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm actually feeling more special after that introduction than I was feeling before, so thank you for that. How are you?
I am very well, and I'm excited to dive right in and hear about what you're all about, Ed, even though I think I have a few ideas regarding that. So I'm going to just dive right in. Ed, how do you help leaders optimize mental and physical performance, and why?
Oh, it's a great question. I guess I would need to take it backwards to where I started, because I started out in my career, I guess, as a personal trainer and an injury treater and rehabber. And one of the problems that I consistently found is that people already knew what to do to a degree, but they couldn't get themselves to consistently do it. So I was trying to fix what was being seen as a physical problem when actually it was a mental problem, because people would be sat in front of me saying, I'm going to consistently do this thing, and then finding that they weren't consistently doing it. So I had to start looking at things from both a mental and a physical point of view. Why? I guess that's a deeper question. I think
why business leaders? Why is that an important demographic?
Impact. If you take the leader of a herd of wildebeest and you watch its behavior, you will see an echo of the wildebeest right the way out to the smallest, mimicking the actions, mimicking the tensions and the fear and the responses of that leader to know how safe they are in the world. So I can go right to the bottom of a company and I can help the copy guy, and I can probably not earn particularly well because he only has a certain amount of income to be able to provide this service. And if I make his life markedly better, I probably don't look after my own life with the income that I make. And I impact him and maybe his family if he has a family. If I impact the CEO of a company deeply impact the CEO of a company towards transforming his life, or her life, I should say, that has a ripple effect throughout a whole company, and I still hit the copy guy at the bottom and his family, but I get to have a ripple effect throughout a whole organization. So I guess it's because I want to go deeper and have a larger impact across the world.
Yeah, I can see that you're a proponent of the trickle-down effect of impact, if you could say it that way.
Yep.
What struck me when you were just talking about what you do is two things: consistency and the connection between the mind and body. Maybe we could just take a dive into the mind-body connection right now. Why is it that so many get it wrong, that there's this distinction between the mind and body, and these two seemingly independent systems do not interact at a profound level?
Well, I guess it all comes back to education there. For a really, really long time, for many, many years throughout history, we've seen body and mind as being two very, very separate entities. And so we see brain as mind, and so my mind is inside my brain, and then my body is separate, and I'm either working on one or the other. But just something as simple as a standing desk or a sitting desk is showing us that there's a significant difference in mental performance whether we're stood up or we're sat down. And we can witness these connections in almost every area of life where we think it's a body, it's a mind. And when we think it's the mind, it's the body. And I think we're moving gradually towards accepting that those two things are one and the same. And if something is happening in our body, it's just a byproduct of something that's going on in our brain.
Can we take a concrete example where we say stress? Tell me what's going on both in the brain and the body in workplace stress.
So the way I like to look at this, because stress is a word that's been so overused, so I take a neuroscience word that is...
Sorry, I just perpetuated that trend. I take a different word.
Whew, don't worry, I'm not judging you. I take the word threat. When a brain is in threat, we're being dominated by the amygdala in our brain. So we're operating from fight, flight, or freeze. And this is making us dominated by the sympathetic branch of our nervous system. So this is what results in those symptoms that we see further down the line. These random malfunctions that we believe have befallen us for seemingly no reason. Like, I'm one of the insomniacs that exists in the world. I'm one of the people who has lots of excess fat in the world. I'm one of the smokers. I'm one of the heavy drinkers. We see all of these things as random occurrences, as being part of a hand that we were dealt. They are downstream effects. So we spend all of our time trying to add things into the stream. Like, I need to add in exercise, and I need to add in healthier food, and I need to take out cigarettes. And actually, although trying to remove is positive and trying to add in is positive, generally, by the time we're adults, we are so programmed by our thoughts and responses and our beliefs and our values picked up across our lives. In trying to change our behaviors, it's like trying to catch water. We're trying to change something downstream. Mm. If we go up to the top, to the factory, which is the brain, which is informing the nervous system, and then find out what's going on in the brain, we can, in a more real way, change the actions further downstream, or make those actions more likely to stick. So a habit that is, let's take, for example, smoking, has a cue, which is essentially a feeling. And then the smoking is the routine that gives us the reward that our brain asked for. The cue was, I have a feeling, and I want either to enhance this feeling or I want to take away this feeling. We will always attack at the level of the cigarette, which isn't the problem. The problem is the cue that's triggering that. The cue and the response are wired together.
So if I'm understanding correctly, the core to getting optimal physical health is to rewire the brain in the most productive way possible.
Absolutely.
Is that possible, I guess, would be my next question. I read about neuroplasticity and how the brain can rewire itself. But I also read at the same time that, you know, your first 3 to 7 years on this earth have such a profound impact on the brain you have that you're kind of stuck with that hand you've been dealt. What is your take on neuroplasticity and, I guess, environment contra your genetic dispositions?
Well, I think that to start with your genetic dispositions, we have gene. And, for example, we have the warrior gene that constantly appeared in America and people actually getting off murders and violent crimes because they were possessing the warrior gene. But actually, the warrior gene is dependent upon environment. So you can find people who have the warrior gene in a very different environment never becoming violent. So yes, genes, we have genetic predispositions, but we also require that environment in order to allow that to blossom.
And I guess my question would be then, what is the ideal environment for creating the best health outcome?
That is the great question, right? Is environment is the starting point of it. If you change an environment, you'll change your behavior. Quite famously, almost 700,000 American soldiers were going to come back from Vietnam with some level of dependence upon heroin and set up these, I hope I'm right in saying Nixon, but I believe it was Nixon, set up these organizations because this was about to be an unprecedented problem, right, of a huge number of heroin-dependent individuals who are about to land on America. So they set up an organization to deal with it, and they tracked all of these individuals, and within a year, they found that fewer than 5% had any addiction to heroin. But the way we think about addiction is once you've started, you're hooked, which is a great message for cigarette companies, for example, right? But but it's not actually the truth. The truth is it's our environment that creates our behaviors. So what is the perfect environment? That's a difficult question to answer.
How do you train your brain, I guess, to give that output that you want? If you said before, how do you get out of the sympathetic nervous system, or how do you calm your amygdala down? If that has such an impact on it.
Absolutely. I mean, to take the extremes, if I were to ask someone what is the most relaxing or creative or content environment that you could be in, it would be individual to all of those people. And what they would be telling me is a past history of their life to a certain degree, the stuff that had most made them feel like that way. But there are universal things that people generally see as relaxing. The Buddha statue hasn't offended many people, right? And so the presence of that can be calming to some people. And if I got a universal list, melodic music might be calming, for example, and everybody might agree, the sea or forests. And these things might come up really, really frequently. But if I was to start bringing in objects that had caused people to go into states of threat into the wrong part of their brain, it would be because those objects had been present during highly stressful times in their life. So I'm more likely to elevate your nervous system towards the sympathetic if there's a laptop present, and if there's a mobile phone present, and if there's a lawyer present, right? Because you're more likely to have had stressful times associated to someone communicating with you negatively about your business than I am able to go, oh, but this person really freaks out when there are hammocks, coconuts and sunshine and water present. These are obviously the extremes, but if I'm looking to create an environment for particular behaviours, I want to make those values driven. So if I can find out what someone most values in the world and then start working outwards from there, they can start creating an environment to trigger the behaviours that they want. And that can just come from something as simple as changing or adding in relationships, right? If I want to have an impact on business in Denmark, I need to start having conversations with business leaders and with leaders in Denmark. So what's the best way to do that? Well, I'd start a podcast, right? It's a change in environment. The Global Denmark podcast is going to be huge.
It already is.
And it already is. And that's an environmental change, right, that has facilitated something that I want more of in my life.
But Ed, how do you, as a consultant, a coach, get people to know what they need if they don't know themselves? You know, if they cannot articulate the value set that drives them, or if they haven't gone through that Socratic self-examination, how can you help them facilitate this process and begin the journey?
I guess just like with anything else where it's an exploration, first you create safety. So you can't explore until you've created safety, and you can't form new ideas until you've explored, and you can't reach your values until you've gone through an exploration process. So it's always going to work in these pyramid or concentric circles. Mm-hmm. So I might start a conversation by asking somebody to bring up a memory of something amazing that happened to them when they were a child, or something where they go, I'm really good at this, and other people around me don't seem to be so good at this, that perhaps results in me going, oh, well, this is obviously a part of that character, and it's a part of who you are. It's one of your gifts, one of your talents. I might start a conversation with someone and see what angle they look at a problem from, because the way that we talk and the way that we think always displays what our values are, whether we're clear on that or not. You and I had a conversation the other week where I saw something about a podcast and you were like, oh, let's not release that to save this person from sharing that with the world. And I thought about it from their perspective and you thought about it from the world's perspective. And you know what? That had never crossed my mind. And, you know, that's one of the amazing things about integration, right? It's you seeing something that I just didn't. And maybe if I'd have had more time and if I'd stepped back from it, but I immediately filtered it through my values and you immediately filtered it through yours. And
the power of diverse perspectives.
Absolutely.
What that can lead to. Speaking of memories, I want to pivot a little bit to your past. Obviously, you're not Danish yet. You're from the UK, from England. Tell us about your past and kind of how it shaped, I guess, the person and leader you've become.
That's a great question. I guess if I start in a business context and then to what I'm doing now and to amble around that, I guess I spent a huge part of my life just being led by the things that I most enjoyed. And I could probably point out times in my life where I got burned by that, by going, no, you're not allowed to enjoy that. And no, you're not allowed to enjoy that. And ultimately ended
up... Seek pleasure, avoid pain.
Indeed. And ultimately ended up going, okay, so I'm pretty good at this sport thing, so I'll follow that avenue. And I think probably not being that popular with teachers, etc., at school for wanting to define my own route. And I think that's a very real experience for many entrepreneurs that I speak to, actually. So I followed this sport route up and I eventually ended up speaking to a friend of mine who was a physiotherapist who'd just written a university course, and university was not on my radar. So this course, you're going to love it. It's designed for individuals to go into professional sports teams, and there will be a coaching arm where you can become a sports coach, and there will be a rehab arm where you can be a rehab-led trainer. So I did 2 years of this course and I learned coaching and rehab and strength and conditioning and nutrition. And then it was time to choose direction, and I actually found myself going down the rehabilitation route. And the overarching idea of this qualification was that an individual would be able to go into a professional football club, for example, and be the go-between that allowed all of these different practitioners to speak the same language, or to help them converse with me, and then I could break down to the coach to stop 10 people speaking to the coach and confusing. Or I could be at a lower level. I could be the rehabber, the masseur, the nutritionist, the strength and conditioning coach, the sports psychologist. So I finished this degree, went into the world, and the world said, you're insane. You need at least 3 to 5 years of experience in each one of these. And I was like, so how do you, because I know that you can't have a massive budget, and the clubs that I was speaking to, how do you afford the best in the business when you can't afford to pay one of these practitioners well? And they said, well, what we do is we go into the community and we find the very best in the area, and we offer them 10 hours work for not very much money, but the ability to say, we work here. So I thought, okay, so I'm trying to do a practical thing, so I need a real world qualification.
Sure.
So I started finding the best in the business and started offering to work some for free and some for pay and some for I can help if enough work comes in.
And the best in the business within rehabilitation and
I should say
nutrition.
The best physiotherapist in town, the best strength and conditioning coach, the best nutritionist, the best doctors, the best psychologists.
Looking at mind and body performance.
Just everything that I was still really interested from the course and putting it all together.
Yeah.
And I found some outstanding people, some right at the top of their game. But I also found a blind spot. By working with all of these people, they all had similar private talk, i.e. talk that wouldn't make it to the person that they were working with.
Okay.
That was a frustration. And then every job holds a frustration. But the frustration was universal. It was the same. I keep telling these people what to do. Why aren't they doing it?
Mm.
And it was universal. So I would say to them, why aren't they doing it? And with the best will in the world, what came back was they don't want it enough. They won't commit the time to it. They don't have the willpower. They're just self-sabotaging themselves. And it was all things that didn't quite sit well with me as a 23-year-old at the time, who had basically allowed his life to be like a pinball machine of staying away from the pain and going towards the pleasure, right?
Sure.
I was like, well, I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm doing those things consistently, and nobody is writing disciplined and strong-willed on my tombstone if I die tomorrow, right? So something else must be going on.
Mm.
So I started looking into what was going on, and this is where I came back to the neuroscience of it being the missing puzzle, helping somebody consistently create a habit out of the thing that they need to do to get the result they want.
That's fascinating. You know, when you reflect back upon your journey, I guess the years went by. You were in the UK market for a long time, helping out.
20 years.
20 years, yeah. In your experience, I guess we'll start with the UK, was there a certain prototype of CEO or just a personality that you could see, okay, from the beginning, this person's going to transform their life, or this person simply, they're not going to make it? Are there indicators or red flags that go off in your mind right away when you meet someone? People can look at themselves and say, okay, I need to deal with X first, and then I'm ready.
Yeah, a feeling that I get, that I know that this person is a buyer, that they're buying what I have to sell. They've gone through the information that I've put out in the world, and they know that I solve the problem that they're struggling with, and they're not gathering information. I know now within the first 10 or 15 minutes, if somebody talks to me about their pain or problem or challenge for the first 10 minutes, they're there to get their problem solved. If somebody talks to me about my product and what it does, and the little bits that they can get from it, and the adaptations they can make to it, and it's all product, product, product,
right,
that person isn't ready. They are window shopping because they still want to be able to choose what solves their problem, not buy what solves their problem.
Mm.
So if someone's ready to go, I want the thing that solves my problem, those people are ready. If somebody is saying, I want to keep window shopping till I have the thing that I want to solve my problem, those people aren't ready. And that's where I moved away from personal training, because I would attract people who wanted exercise to solve their problem.
Yeah.
Why? Because in their brain, exercise isn't wired to threat, to fear, to sending them into the wrong part of their brain. But maybe changing the way they eat when the way they eat is a huge part of their social life and their brain fears loss of human connection by changing their diet, or inability to conduct business meetings because they fear saying, I'm sorry that I'm not going to be drinking alcohol today, conversation. So our brain will constantly pinball us, just like it did me, away from pain so far in advance of that pain that we don't even know that that's what's happening to us.
So it's really grasping that you no longer have to live in the mammalian part of your brain, but actually you're not in a state of survival out in nature. You can let go of those survival mechanisms that are counterproductive to your health and actually live in accordance with human well-being as we know it in a safe 21st century context.
Absolutely. I mean, the overarching thing is that our lives are primarily led by, I feel okay doing this, I'm going to do it. And every time we go, this doesn't feel comfortable, I'm going to move away from it. And a huge part of integration and challenging ourselves and growth is going, this doesn't feel comfortable, I'm going to do it. Just like someone who climbs up a ladder to a part of the diving board that makes them tremble and shiver and shake and feel nervous. They knew rationally at the bottom they weren't in any danger. But every single person without fail that jumps off climbs out the other side and runs straight back up again. You know, that's the metaphor for all of it, really. It's finding those discomforts. And coaching allows us to find those in a safe environment, challenge them, and just loosen the belief that it's dangerous enough so that we can find the courage to go and do the jump.
I completely agree. I think leaving comfort zones in a multitude of contexts is essential for growth. Apropos integration, let's talk a little bit about your journey to Denmark. When was it you arrived, and can you tell us a little bit about that process and what you've experienced to date?
Yeah, absolutely. I moved here in the summer of 2017, and I had in my mind, and my wife had in her mind, a lifestyle that was going to be Denmark and a work life that was going to be the UK. So I will talk in companies and I will help companies establish values and direction. And I will also do that with individuals. And I'll also do the fitness aspect as well, the health aspect. And I do a lot of that online and on Skype and on the telephone. And I have clients that I've been seeing for years in the UK. And I felt like when I came here that I wanted that to be my life.
You simply export on the business side, you would just business as usual. You're just geographically in a different place.
Essentially, yes. And I did that for 6 months and I let the dust settle. And what I realized, I was missing actual face-to-face human connection. And I was skiing in France the Christmas of 17. Yeah. And my wife asked me if I was going to make any resolutions, because I don't typically do that. And I said, yes, I'm going to meet a new Dane or a new person in Denmark every business day. And I'm now over 400 coffees.
Every day?
Over 400 coffees every day, which keeps me wired. And I don't know how long I'll sustain it, but it's the Danish way.
But a meeting every day?
A coffee meeting every working day in Denmark. Some days I've done three, and some days it's just I've done zero. But it has totaled up to 400 to date. I've had three today, would you believe it? And a couple of them will result in business. A couple of them are repeat coffees now, which I don't actually count repeat coffees. I really, really, really enjoyed it. Absolutely loved it.
What has resulted in that, I guess, besides a lot of coffee and meeting a lot of people?
My starting point was, I mentioned that I was talking to my wife that brought it up over Christmas. And one of the things I like doing, with coaching clients is finding out what their key strengths are and trying to operate from those things with everything. And one of the things that came out was my wife just happened to say, well, you've been knocking on doors and asking kids to come out to play since you were 4 years old. And that was kind of the place I grew up in, right? Your ability to knock on a door and make the child in front of you think that you're going to be doing something that's not just going to get results, but is going to be an awesome experience as well. it's kind of just brought me back to that, right? So my marketing has now been about having great conversations with people and seeing if we've got a connection and seeing if I can solve a problem for them and if we both enjoy that experience. And I guess the result of it has been starting a podcast with you, writing for the international newspaper. I'm doing a keynote in April for the VL group. Many, many clients, helping many companies, working with some professional golfers and some connections to top golf clubs. And it's just been so much fun.
That's amazing. And then when we look at, you know, it's well documented that Denmark is one of the most difficult countries in the world to settle into. I guess from the familial perspective, first of all, how did you experience integrating here to date? Have you experienced any challenges? Do you have any tips? If you could go back and talk to yourself right at the airport upon arrival that you would do differently?
I think I would probably spend more time going out of my way to find opportunities to linguistically integrate. I go to France quite often and I can practice my French really easily. I just go into a shop and I ask for something in French and they will come back to me in French. And I can go into a shop in Denmark and I will ask for something in Danish and it will flash across the person's eyes. Do I want to chat to an idiot in Danish, or would I like to switch to a language that both of us speak perfectly well? Yes, my friend, what can I get you? Would you like some milk with that? Ah, crap. So that would be one thing. I mean, I know that Denmark is typically difficult to integrate into, and I can hear stories from lots of British people and American people who've found real challenges with integrating, but I've never lived in a world that I've never had a job, really, and since I was 21. So I've never really lived in a world that I have to find a place and then try and integrate with the people that are there. I find the people that are keen to integrate with me and bring those people close, I think, because that's the nature of an individual,
an individual entrepreneur, goes about their own way of breaking into the system.
Yeah, so create your own system, right?
Yeah.
So I haven't got that experience of being dropped in a work environment, but I do speak to a lot of people who've really struggled with it.
I want to ask one final question and then we'll take a quick break. What is your opinion on the state of health in the broad sense here in Denmark compared to the UK where you were?
I'm going to answer that question probably a little bit differently to how you'd expect. In the UK, there is, and I think it's probably to do with population size, there's lots of regulation. So if you qualify as a doctor at 26, you have to maintain a certain level of study and you get given points for that level of study and courses that you must attend that are qualified courses. And if you don't do that, you will lose your license in whatever healthcare practitioner area you're in. So physiotherapy or osteopathy or doctor or dentist or anything like that. And I don't think that exists in Denmark. So you can qualify at 25 and you can still be given the same information at 50 that you learned 25 years ago and is largely out of date. And so there's a high level of personal responsibility in Denmark to look after your own education and keep evolving yourself. And although that's the approach that I've always personally taken, I absolutely love learning. I can see that that can also create potential problems when not everybody is buying into that approach. So I'd love to see some more regulation. And I've spoken to a number of really smart people that are doing some amazing things with AI and constant learning, which is just fascinating. And I'm hoping that, that those things will make a huge difference. But a nation of cars can't really look down on a nation of bicycles and say one is is healthier than the other.
Do you see any consistency differences? You mentioned consistency is a key thing between how a Danish CEO would approach transformation as opposed to a CEO over in the UK. Any cultural differences that have an impact, in your opinion? Are these universal human factors?
Yeah, I think there are universal human factors. And what I'll always say to my clients is, in order for you to recognize a trait in someone else, it must exist within you. The difference is degrees. So I see different degrees, but I don't feel like I'm in a position to actually give a really clear answer to that, because I haven't seen 100 people. I work with a consistent base of probably 15 people at
a
time.
The sample size, yeah.
So my sample size just isn't enough to say Danes are and right. English people are, and I'm trying my very best to not create those categories if I can.
Yeah, instead of looking, this human being is.
Absolutely, and I think there's probably a strong lesson in trying to do that with everyone, because as soon as we start saying this group of people are, our brain will go, yeah, we'll take that. Now everybody who is like that is, and just start broadening those circles.
The cognitive bias that gets us nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that's a great place to take a little break. So we're going to come right back in a few minutes, and we're going to have some quick fire questions to round off the podcast today. Welcome back to the Global Denmark Podcast. We are sitting here with today's special guest, Ed Lee, and we are going to now have the quick fire portion of the podcast. Ed, there is a quote from Abraham Lincoln that goes, "If I had 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first 4 hours sharpening the axe." And this metaphor obviously speaks to human performance. How would you sharpen the metaphorical axe, so to speak?
Well, obviously this question forms a really large part of what I actually do. So I help leaders to sharpen the axe, metaphorically speaking. It's very important to me to make sure that I'm mentally at the top of my game so I can give my best to my clients and they can, you know, get the best in result. So I start the day generally with meditation. Sometimes my children will disrupt that, but meditation followed by a 15-minute workout if I know that I'm not going to get a window to do that during the day. And then I will have 2 minutes, the last 2 minutes of my shower will be as cold as I can and get it to go. And during that window, I'll have also drank about a liter of water with a little pinch of rock salt in it. And then obviously I have a specific nutrition regimen throughout the day. And
could you say a little bit about that for our listeners?
I use my nervous system as the way that I start with this. So our sympathetic nervous system is typically engaged when we're doing new work or work that requires an awful lot of focus. So if I'm going to be interviewing somebody or something like that, or I'm on stage or something, or I have a client, I'm going to be typically leaning towards being dominated by the sympathetic branch of my nervous system. And we know that there's no blood going to digestion during that time. So if I'm to eat and then have a client, I'm not going to digest that food particularly well. So I will only eat when I know that I'm dominated by my parasympathetic nervous system. So typically, if I've got a really busy day, I will not eat breakfast or lunch, and I'll just have a nice, relaxing evening meal. Often, I'll end up having a smaller lunch at around 2-ish once I've seen all of my clients, and maybe I've just got some creative work that I need to be doing in that afternoon, or communicating with business partners or the like. And then my nutrition leans towards I have a nutrition pyramid that I go through with my clients, and obviously I always practice what I preach, and that goes towards eating locally grown, locally sourced food, a wide variety of colours, and lots of sort of nutrient-dense foods.
Two things I heard there before. You put a little bit of rock salt into your water. What does that do?
If we don't eat particularly large amounts of carbohydrates, for example, so I know that I'm not going to be eating during the day, and carbohydrates are something that our body will burn through and kind of be low on if I haven't eaten anything for 12 hours. And for each gram of carbohydrates we have, our body holds on to 3 grams of water. So basically, you pee a lot if you don't have sodium in your system. So that little bit of sodium, firstly, it helps calm the nerves down, but also keeps you out of, to a degree, being internally forced into the sympathetic nervous system. Basically, you're more stressed if you don't have enough sodium. And there's so many things going on inside our bodies that can create stress, which is a large part of why I do physical and mental performance, because so many people will go for stress coaching, and actually it was just because their second brain, their gut, was sending messages to their first brain, and then we looked for stories in our external environment to explain. So we go, oh, my family stresses me out, my sleep stresses me out, my commute stresses me out, my colleagues stress me out, my financial situation stresses me out, Yellowstone stresses me out, the economy stresses me out, when in reality, it's your gut bacteria that's stressing you out. So unless you take a holistic approach to these things, you can end up chasing shadows and going, look, I'm still chronically stressed, when actually it was just your gut bacteria, as an example. And there are many possibilities that could fall under that.
Instead of looking at all the external symptoms of what your narrative is telling you is going wrong with your body, take the journey within to look at what kind of environment you're providing for your brain and the neurological system to thrive.
Absolutely.
Secondly, you said that you start the day with meditation. Is there a particular form of meditation you would recommend to the audience or that you find helpful?
The type of meditation that I recommend, Sam Harris. Sam Harris is a neuroscientist. I know you're a fan of Sam Harris yourself. I'm dealing with lots of type A, analytical, very rational humans. And when you start talking about transcendental meditation and the like, you lose people. But when you talk about Sam Harris, the atheist neuroscientist, you get some attention. And I use his app.
The mindfulness-based meditation.
Waking up, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. Ed, have you ever undergone any one event or experience in your life that you can, looking back, credit with a huge leap forward in either your performance or the human being that you've become?
I think that during the recession, 2008, I had just purchased my dream flat with my wife. And within 6 weeks of purchasing that flat, I had a woman inside a company where I had a contract make up some stories about my practice that made me lose that contract. And I had another business that I was working inside go into administration, which lost me somewhere in the region of 50% of my income within a 6 week window. And then I put a proposal to somebody who accepted that proposal, and it was to bring my whole business inside their business and run their business as a rehab center. And I did that and fought really, really hard and switched from a relatively laid-back approach to life to working 14 hours a day. And I managed to create something that was quite strong. And then the owner of that business moved on, and I felt like it plummeted me down to the same place again, until my father-in-law said to me, why don't you just take over the whole business? And again, it was having a conversation with somebody that had seen the world from a different angle and had seen something that I'd never even considered being able to look at. And then I started looking at the numbers.
But there wasn't just a track, B track, but there's the C option that, wow, there
yep.
it is.
Absolutely. And that led me to taking over this premises, working incredibly hard that I'd kind of learnt to do or reconnected with is probably more accurate over the previous year, and doubled the premises in size within 7 months. And I kind of put this really big healthcare company in the UK that I was able to sell in order to move here. So yeah, that would be the one-off experience that was actually I can hard work through things, and the more conversations that I'm willing to have from people who've got different perspectives and can see the world without the threat that exists inside me at that given time has just got so much power to it. And I think that's one of the things that turned me towards coaching as well. Because when you're looking through the world of threat, you can only use your previous experience to get you out of it, what you would have tried last time, and ultimately a fight, flight or freeze response that got you out of trouble last time. But just borrowing someone else's brain moves you into a different part of your brain. So yeah, that was...
Yeah, there's a different way to live.
Absolutely. And that was just a massive thing for me. And that's why I just try and absorb as many conversations as I can these days.
I can hear as someone that practices meditation and is acutely aware of the brain's impact on the body that you're an emotionally intelligent guy. But are there any traits that you wrestle with in your daily journey? Although you're a coach, you're human too, that you really have to regulate to keep that peak performance.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a problem solver by nature. So I have to be mindful of my tendency to go, ooh, 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 I know the answer to this one. But rather know that in order for someone to do something, they have to connect it to a story that exists in their brain. So a question will better serve someone than an answer will.
Mm. Active listening instead of implanting the answer into their brain.
Absolutely.
This is quite a juxtaposition, but what is something weird about you?
What is something weird about me? Do you know what? The number of times we've asked these questions and I've got what would I do? I can hear a song once or twice and know all of the words to it. And I've always been able to do that.
Regardless if you like the song or not?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, if I like it less, it won't leave my mind. And I'm actually seeing the same thing happening to my children. And it's one of the things that I've was told so often in childhood that I wasn't a good learner. And then I brought that back to, hang on a minute, I can learn instantly huge amounts of dialogue and repeat it back verbatim. The way that I was being taught was wrong. So now I seek to listen in a way that lights me up like music does.
That's a great answer. And have you thought about a career on stage, Broadway perhaps?
Because of the quick learning, yeah, maybe.
And if you were at a dinner party and you could invite just two people from history, alive or dead, who's sitting next to you and why?
Every time we've had this question, someone has mentioned Trump, someone's mentioned Obama, and someone's mentioned Mandela. I'm going to say Teddy Roosevelt, just because of the huge number of different careers that are seemingly unrelated that he had and different accomplishments and how they were all, before we knew the scientific data on values, his whole life was sort of was values driven. And I think I read in one of his books that he had 13 values that he led his life by and he would practice one a day. And that's something that I use as a thread with my clients. So Teddy would be one of them. And Alex Ferguson.
Mm. Sir Alex.
Sir Alex. I'm so sorry, Al. Sir Alex Ferguson. I've been a lifelong Manchester United fan. And to see how they lost their way after he left, and, you know, the thing that he built just by having some really clear ideas and being really consistent in the way that he managed and really consistent with humans and the things that he believed is just a really powerful thing. And I imagine he's got some really interesting stories that never made it to the papers.
That sounds like an interesting dinner indeed. Apropos values, is there a particular value or a quote that helps inform major decisions?
Well, I've mentioned values a lot here, so I do have a whole set of values, and it might take you forever to go through those in detail. But I used to spend a really long time making decisions. Is this the right thing for my business? Is this the right thing for my business? And I now use joy as my decision-making tool. So joy is one of them. If it's not a hell yeah, then it's a hell no. And I'll do this literally with every single action, every single decision I ever make gets filtered through there. If it's not going to bring more joy into my life, obviously I make sure that there's food on the table, but I'll want to take on clients that I'm going to go, I'm going to get as much out of this as they're going to get out of this. And I believe that they get the best of me when I use that to make decisions.
That's absolutely fantastic. Did you have a teacher or mentor when you were younger that helped influence you, or has this been a go-at-it-alone approach?
There's the Arnold Schwarzenegger quote, right? There's no such thing as a self-made man. And he does a speech, and I absolutely love that. The idea that there hasn't been anyone and you've just fought against everything is probably just the lens that you're looking through.
In many ways, the American philosophy, pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah.
You can do anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that portrays so many different people, I think. So a good question. I think my old primary school headmaster, although I could probably literally name hundreds of them, used to pull me out of PE in order to play table tennis. And he was the first person that ever went, "You come out of this because you're amazing at this thing here. So I'm going to single you out from here." I think I was like 10 years old, and it was the first time that I'd ever been told, "I've got a unique ability to do this thing."
He saw you and recognized you.
Yeah. And I think that was a kind of a big moment for me, rather than it being a big molding or mentoring type of thing. Just that single incident jumped out at me.
What book or books have you most gifted or been influenced by?
The book that I've most gifted would be The Alchemist. The Alchemist would be the book that I've most read. I used to love books that went, "Here are the lessons, take these." And then I realized that what that is just filling my head with more knowledge that I can hand to people as, "This is what you should do." And I'm now starting to really appreciate both the telling of stories, but reading stories that guide me to take my own thoughts from that. And so rather than give people books, basically go, "And I've assessed what your problem is, and the answers are in this book," journey books. And that's probably number one for me.
Well, I'm very mindful of your time, and I'm going to wrap up the podcast here with one final question. And that is, what can you teach Denmark? And what do you think Denmark can contribute to the rest of the world?
That question always sounds so sort of grandiose, but I think to ask questions more than you give answers.
Ask questions more than you give answers.
Ask more questions than answers, yeah.
Both for you to Denmark and Denmark back to...
Absolutely. Integration. Same lesson.
I love it. Well, before we go, is there anything you would like to promote personally or tell the audience where they can find you?
Obviously, I'd like people to like, share, and review the podcast. It really is the difference between us being able to continue it and not continue it. It comes down to reviews, likes, shares, listeners. So if you like what you hear, this podcast aside, then please share it with your friends and give it a review. People can find me typically on LinkedIn, but I'm also on Facebook. Ed Ley, L-E-Y. Yeah, that's it for now.
Well, we know Ed's making lots of rounds and lots of coffee since that Christmas 18th. Perfect. Ed, it's a pleasure, and to be continued, right?
Indeed.
And to our audience, don't forget to jump over to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And please hit the subscribe button, share, rate, review, anything you can do to help our podcast, where we are trying to drive a conversation where we open up Denmark more to the world and the world to Denmark. See you next time on the GDP. Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up your printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.